All right, welcome back to Pinder and Steinberg. We are live at the Core in downtown Calgary on the second floor. They've got a great big setup for the Calgary National Bank Challenger, which, of course, starts this weekend at the Austin and Victor Center. Tickets from as low as $10 on sale now. And, of course, you said the first weekend.
Free. It's all free. Good. Free to the family. It's the family weekend, Saturday, Sunday, and then you're never paying more than $30. The most expensive ticket will be the final weekend, $30 tickets. That is unbelievable value.
I love it. Our next guest is a massive tennis fan, I'm sure. Elliot, you Felix Auger-Aliassime or Denis Shapovalov? Who's your horse?
You know what? I was at the Davis Cup event, and I saw Shapovalov. So I didn't see Aliassime, but I've certainly read about him. But since I've seen Shapovalov, I got to go with him because I actually have face-to-face witnessing of how he's played.
You hair guys got to stick together, right? You both like the big flow.
Yeah, good flow. We both like the flow. That's right. Although mine is not growing as much as it used to.
All right. That's about it for the small talk. Your first thought in your headlines piece this week, Sam Bennett and rumored trade destinations. How did you stumble across this and by being number one on your list? It's clearly inevitably going to happen, right? That's you got to rank. These are rankings.
I don't know if it's inevitable. I just think, like, if you take a look at the way the season started, it's hard not to look at it and say, you know, there's something going on here. And, you know, like, Sam Bennett is a talented guy. It just hasn't worked out to this point in Calgary. And you look at it, there's a new coach, there's a changed lineup, and it was hard not to look at the first two games and say, and even the way he was used in the preseason, and say, okay, we got something going on here. And I thought it was really interesting that last night he played his most. He played 14 minutes, and Frolik was the guy who ended up under 10. But I just, what I was trying to say there is that if Calgary ever wanted to do it, I think there would be plenty of interest. I think there's been a lot of teams over the past 2 years who've asked about Bennett and said, is this a guy that you would be interested in moving? And look, you look up the road, you know, Edmonton traded Taylor Hall and it's blown up in their face. And I'm sure that Tree Living looks at that situation and says, this guy's still 22. I'm not sure we want to do this. And I think that's just kind of where you are. I think it's more like, honestly, Ryan, I think it's more like if he doesn't have a role here, and the first two games sure looked like it, I don't think they're going to have any trouble trading him to the people who are interested.
Elliot, it's funny because when I read that on 31 Thoughts today, too, it certainly piqued my interest. And I know you were at the draft in Dallas. From what I understand, when the Flames were making their deal with the Carolina Hurricanes, the Dougie Hamilton trade, Sam Bennett was involved at the very least in the negotiations. Obviously, he didn't end up moving then. I don't know if you heard the same thing, but I do think the Flames have been open to moving this guy for a little bit, but I don't think they're trying to ship him out for nothing.
Well, I think that's part of the problem, Pat, is that, you know, right now, like if you're Calgary and you really are honestly thinking about trading him, you're trying to trade him at a value for what you think he can be, right? The problem is that the guy you're trading with is probably looking at it like, well, we're going to trade for him based on what he is now and what he's being used at. And that those are two very different things. I could see that being a concern for the Flames, them saying, you know what, we're not giving him away, and other teams saying, well, we're not trading with you based on the potential of what you think he can be. So I could see two sides there arguing very different things about what Bennett's worth.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think there's also, with the added forward depth, there's not a lot of room all of a sudden in the top six, which is where I think Sam Bennett believes he belongs to play. And then on top of that, we're talking about a group that's almost entirely under contract next season, with the exception of Matthew Tkachuk, who's going to need a hefty raise. Even if Sam does start to blossom, I don't know how you necessarily fit that deal in. It's been a long time that it hasn't worked since 18-year-old Sam Bennett took over the playoffs, three springs ago. But it's something that I've speculated for a long time that this certainly reeks of a change of scenery candidate, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, and the other thing, too, is it's a center, and there's always room for centers. But, you know, the one thing I don't get the sense is, I don't know if you guys are in any hurry to do it. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I mean, the fact is we're three games into the season, and you never know what can happen. Somebody can get hurt. Somebody can slump. Sam Bennett can get an opportunity, and he can take advantage. And, you know, I think the other thing, too, is, especially when you play where you guys play, where the travel is tougher, you always need extra bodies. Like, you'd rather have one too many than one too few. So I don't see the rush if that's what you guys want to do.
Yeah, that certainly would make some sense. And as you noted, if you're going to be selling on him, better to sell high. You'd love to get him on a bit of a heater, even if you were inclined mm-hmm. on moving him sooner than later. Okay, let us dance elsewhere. Some of your other thoughts of note. We've heard from multiple spots about Eugene Melnyk's impassioned speech to his counterparts around the league. I understand what he's saying, but is there any doubt starting to circulate that financially he could survive incredibly lean revenues, which is sort of what we're all anticipating this year in Ottawa?
Well, I mean, we've all had that question, right? Like, it's something we've all wondered. It's like one of those things right now, Ryan, that we've all heard these rumors for so long. You just don't know what's true and what isn't anymore. You know, like we talked about, and you mentioned in the question, he made a pretty passionate speech saying that he's staying on board. But, you know, the one thing that is becoming clear is that this process for the new arena downtown, it is going to take a long time. Like, you know, normally, like when the Islanders got their arena done, you know, they rushed that process through and they said, you know, it'll probably be 3 years until we can play in it. Like, we're on a way longer timeline on Ottawa than that. You know, like, I've had people who say that with the amount of approvals and government hoops they need to jump through and then the construction, you know, they said it could be, you know, 5 to 10 years before we even see this. So, you know, I think that's what they really believe that Melnyk is a passionate guy about owning the team. I do think that he's had proposals to buy it before. I think one of the issues is that the new owners would want Melnyk completely out, and I think he loves being the owner of the Ottawa Senators, and he would like to keep a piece. But the key thing I took out of this, Ryan, is that, like, this is not a 3 to 5 year process to get this arena done. It could be much longer than that.
With Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada joins us every Monday, but this week Wednesday on Pinder and Steinberg on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Elliot, you'd know this well, but the excitement around the Toronto Maple Leafs has certainly hyped up another big offensive outing last night for Austin Matthews and for John Tavares. These guys are working. Like, if you wanted the hype train to slow down around the Maple Leafs, their start to the season isn't going to help that.
The Toronto Maple Leafs making everybody sick in 18-19, yes. But, I can't tell you, like, every time I do a broadcast where the Leafs are on, and we don't have them tonight, our Wednesday night game is Philly-Ottawa, like, people are just, like, all over me, like, can you stop just making me sick with the way you talk about them? You know, I wrote that Tavares piece last week, and then we had a Tavares feature on Saturday night. And, like, my buddies are joking after every game. And I've got some buddies who are big Leaf fans. They're like, oh, my God, even we're sick of this. Like, it's really funny. but, you know, they're fun to watch. Like, I mean, at the end of the day, you want an entertaining product, right? And, you know, they're entertaining. The thing that's really blown me away, Pat, is, like, the skill on some of these goals. Like, you know, like that one that – I don't know if you saw the one in Chicago where – Tavares knocked the puck out of the air and skated in and scored. And, like, you know, Matthews, like, just Matthews, you could give him, like, it looks like right now, like a coin slot to shoot at, and he could put it in there. And I think, to me, it's the entertainment factor of it is very high. They're very fun to watch. But the thing is, the skill level of those guys is incredible. And, you know, I was talking to someone today, and he said that, you know, what we're really learning in the NHL now, it's a high skill game. And he said that it used to be, before they changed it, it was a clutch and grab game. He said it's gone a complete 180, and if you don't have high-end skill, you can't win. And he actually talked about Goodrow. Like, you watched that game on Saturday night where you guys were in trouble against Vancouver, and Goodrow made a couple of those unbelievable cross-ice passes to set up goals. And then he had a couple last night in Nashville. Like, he said that if you don't have those guys on your roster, you can't win the Stanley Cup anymore. This is not, like, it's still a team game, and you still have to have depth. But unless you have high-skill guys, you don't have a chance. And those guys are hard to find.
One of them does not have a contract in Toronto. Had a good chat with Tyler Dello last week, and he indicated that December 1 drop-dead date could actually start swinging leverage back towards the Nylander camp, of which I would think the leverage firmly lies in the other camp's corner right now. How do you see this playing out, given that all indications are that there's not a lot of movement towards each other, nor does there seem to be any sort of rush from either side at this point?
First of all, Ryan, there's no such thing as a good conversation with Tyler Dello. I refuse to believe.
A great one. Apologies.
I
like Tyler. You know, come on.
No, I like Tyler, too. I was just taking a shot. I think he's very smart. You know, I think right now we're in a big game of high-stakes poker. And, you know, I think the Maple Leafs are sitting here right now, and, like, I crunched the numbers. In the notes today, I got my hands on some of the figures that the league put out for the Board of Governors, and they're estimating a salary cap next year between 81 and change and 85 and change. And if you go back over the last 5 years and you take the Stanley Cup winner and the percentage of the cap given to their four highest paid players, the highest percentage was the 2017 Penguins, who were 45.2% for Crosby, Malkin, Kessel, and Letang. And if you look at that, two of those contracts aren't legal anymore because you can't do the structure that Crosby and Malkin got. And Kessel is a retained salary transaction with Toronto. And, you know, if the Maple Leafs sign all four of these guys, they're not going to do that. So they're in a real squeeze. And, you know, I do think the longer this goes on with Matthews and the way he's playing right now, and Pat, you asked us before, you're probably going to have to give a bit to him. I believe that he will be above Tavares's $11 million. But, you know, I think they might have to give him a bit more than they wanted to initially. But he's just going to force their hand. And I think as a result, you know, regardless of who you think has the leverage or doesn't have the leverage, I just think that they're in a spot where they can't afford to go over a certain point. And I think that's kind of what they're saying. You know, I think that December 1st thing, the biggest question that comes down to it, Ryan, is, does William Nylander want to play overseas? And, you know, right now the word is he'll do it. And, You know, and then that gives him some leverage. But we'll see where we are in a month's time if we're still unsigned. It's really going to be something else. Like, you know, like, his agent's a tough negotiator. His dad's a tough negotiator. Nylander's a stubborn guy. The one thing I really believe is that the Leafs do like him a lot as a player. I think there's a lot of people, like, coming up with trade scenarios that don't make a lot of sense. I think Dubas really likes Nylander. And I think that despite the problems that they're having with the business, I do think it's a player they really respect his talent.
It's funny, Elliot, you bring up the John Tavares cap hit and how, you know, pretty good chance Matthews will end up making more than that. It was just a quick little comment in one of your 31 thoughts, but, you know, your belief is that the next guy who might kind of be in a similar situation as to where Tavares was this past summer is Artemi Panarin in Columbus.
Yeah, I think that everybody's kind of preparing for that. You know, I think that Panarin's made it clear he wants to be in a big market, probably closer to the coast. I think if the Rangers are interested, I think they'd be a very, very serious contender. But I know that there are teams kind of preparing for the possibility that he could have that kind of a setup.
What are you hearing on Rick Nash right now? Because there were reports 2 days ago that he was about to file his retirement papers. That was refuted yesterday by his agent. But what are you hearing about where Rick Nash is and where he is on potentially returning to play professional hockey?
I think he's a bit conflicted about it. I think it's been a very difficult decision. You know, if you, in the summer, there were reports that he was thinking of retiring, which were true. And, you know, I reached out to him and I sent him a text. And he said, when he texted me back, he said, you know, I'm thinking of coming back and competing for the Stanley Cup. And then the next day, another team said that he told them differently. And I don't think that Rick Nash is lying to anyone. I think that he's just really conflicted about, you know, where he is and what he wants to be. I think that, you know, it's why I was talking to Josh Georges the other day, who's 34 years old and not playing for anyone this year. And he said, the weirdest thing is, for the first time since I was 4 years old, my September doesn't involve hockey. And I think it's, and he was a guy who wanted to play again. And I think that's kind of where Rick Nash is. I think there's part of him that says, you know, I've made a lot of money. They just had a third child. I've got a beautiful family. Maybe I should come home. And there's another part of him that really likes the life. So I think he's conflicted. And I think as for that reason, I don't think he's made the final decision yet. I'll tell you this. It's not going to surprise anybody right now, Pat, if the answer is retired. I don't think anybody at all will be surprised at that, but he's going to make it on his own schedule.
All right. Finally, what have you got this weekend, and what are you working on for the greatest broadcast in all of sports, our favorite Saturday night show?
Well, you know what? We've got you guys are our late game. You're in Colorado. And our early games, we've got Toronto at Washington. We've got Pittsburgh's in Montreal looking to revenge the beatdown they got from the Canadiens at home last week. And we've got Vancouver at Florida with the Pedersen Show. And, you know, I'm with my blog newly out today. I'll start checking around later in the week. You know, I went to Washington before the season to sit down with Ovechkin. One of our producers was in Russia when he had the cup there. He was really interesting to talk to. I said to him at one point, you know, nobody can question you anymore about leadership or the Penguins or whatever you've won. And he goes, well, you tell me what's the next question. Like, I really liked that answer out of him. It was kind of defiant. I thought that was a great response. And, you know what? They've come out big, and I'm looking forward to that game between them and Toronto on Saturday.
All right, great stuff. Always good catching up. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving, by the way. What's the go-to move around the Friedman household?
You know what? We're not a big Thanksgiving family, but we made a decision that next year we're going to do it. My son's birthday was last Thursday, so we had a big party at our house on Friday night. We had 60 people over, so it was, I think that was enough of a get-together for us. When you have to rent tables because you can't fit people in, that's enough of a party for a while.
It's very braggy to have a home in Toronto that can fit 60 people.
Humble brag.
Yeah, you know what? We left half of them out in the backyard, so that will make it.
Thank you, Elliot. See you, buddy.
All right, guys. Have a great night.